The shir is dedicated Le'iloi Nishmas Rachel Leah Bas Rav Chaim Tzvi, and I want to thank Libby, a belated thank you for last week, and a thank you for this week's shir class. Okay, I hope that everyone has the printouts which we sent out a day or two ago, and we're going to now, this shir, we're going to explore one of the very fundamental themes and concepts in the Kabbalah Sa'ari. Actually, I should say Kabbalah Sa'ari, it's actually, we'll see in Yetz Hashem, the sources for this before the Ari, which is called the breaking of the vessels, the Shvira Sakelim. Okay, now we're up to Klal Dalid in the text. It's on Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph, Klal Dalid, beginning on line 98. I'm going to just read through the Gor and translate him, and then after that we will try to go a little bit deeply into what he's saying. Says the Goyin, V'achachba asher bara bo ha-boyre yizbarach, the Chachba, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, Be'ez HaBriya, at the time of the creation, Ha'isa begiloi be'ez yadova shediba ha-boyre az, was clear, was open, with the first utterance of creation. V'chein ha-yahu ha-chachba atzma. Right? And this Chachma, the wisdom with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, was in fact open and clear and intelligible. V'teichav achad dibur, right after HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks, utters the words of creation, this talika Chachma, v'zeh dibur me'osi adova shenivra. So the Chachma and the dibur somehow separate from the thing that was created, because the fact is that the Chachma and Dibur now are not connected, are not attached with the act, the object of creation. But when the Chachma and Dibur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu separate, disconnect themselves from the physical world, even though they're disconnected, nonetheless they leave an imprint. A Rishima is an imprint. If a person investigates, right, investigates this imprint, he will be able to recover the Chachma, the wisdom of God, which he used directly in creating this physical object. And of course, this is done through the tzura, the tumuna, the shape and way in which the object is exists in the world. And therefore, through God's will in maintaining, in sustaining the creation, the object that's created, a person can in fact understand the wisdom with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this object in accordance with his intellectual understanding. In addition to the Chachma and Dibur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is God's providence. Be'ez HaBriya, shel Ois Yadavar, at the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this object, haya hashkach al Ois Yadavar beprotos v'shkachas geluya. There was a clear, open providence on the object. V'techev achakach nistalak ben Adavar hashkacha. And immediately, after the act of creation, God's direct providence is disconnected from the object. However, the God's providence is left on the object, the imprint is left on the object. So therefore, this imprint is necessary so that the object, in fact, does not cease to exist. The act of creation, but in fact, this disconnection of the world from God's wisdom, God's utterance, and God's providence, this is called Shvira. Shvira literally means a breaking. Because at the beginning there was a great amount of providence, a very great amount of providence. I'm over on Daf Kuf Lamed Beis on line 110. Vachachma. Nothing's happening? It's fine. Oh. And the Chachma, God's wisdom, was very intelligible. Now all the lights which constitute God's providence, in fact, leave the object, the chena chokhma, and God's wisdom also leaves the object. And all we have is an imprint. Okay, those are the words of the Goyin. Now, the Goyin introduces here a very important concept called Shvira. Shvira literally means a breaking. And in fact, the Shita of the Goyin appears to be that the Shvira, what's called breaking, is in fact a disconnection, an undoing of the intimate relationship between God's wisdom, utterance, and His providence on the physical world. This constitutes what the Goyin calls Shvira. Now, the notion of Shvira, in fact, is something which we have to, in fact, look to its origin. And it's very, very important for us. We want to set ourselves at least two goals tonight. Three goals. Number one, to understand what the core, what the root of the concept of Shvira is, breakage. Second is, how did the Arizal understand the concept of Shvira? Of course, after we will look at the sources, we will look at how the Arizal expounds upon the concept of Shvira in the Eitz Chaim. And then thördly, we want to look at how the Gor expounds upon the concept of Shvira, which in Mir Tzachon we will see is quite different from that of the Arizal. And of course, the fourth thing which we want to do, I just added one item that we want to do, is to understand the very profound philosophical implications of the machloikis dispute between the Arizal and between the Goyin in how to understand the concept of Shvira. Now, the concept of Shvira appears first in a part of the Zoya which is called the Idra Zuta, which literally means the small hall. Now, there are two very important parts of the Zoya. There is what's called the Idra Rabba, the great hall, and that constitutes part of the Zoya on Parshas Nosai. And then there's the Idra Zuta, which is the small hall, which constitutes part of the Zoya on Parshas Hazinu. Okay, those are two very important parts of the Zoya. A good deal of the Eitz Chaim and the Arizal's entire Kabbalah, as well as the Goyin's Kabbalah, is in fact a commentary on both the Idra Rabba and the Idra Zuta. Now, there's another part of the Zoya which we will speak about, which is called the Safra Desneosa, the hidden book, or the, I should call it, the humble book, the hidden book. And we will speak about that part of the Zoya a little bit later. Now, it says in Idra Zuta, you have it in front of you, it says Idra Zuta Hazinu, Daf Reis Tzadik Beis, Pasuk V'Omer, okay, this is page 55. Pasuk V'Omer. What is it? What do we have here? All right, okay, fine. 54? I'm missing 55. Okay, let me see. Wait a minute, excuse me one second. Okay, well, it looks like I actually Xeroxed 54, 56. I didn't write Xerox 55. Okay, terrible mistake. Anyway, I'm going to read it to you. You're going to have to believe me. I will actually show it to you. That in fact, this thing exists. On page 55, it goes on the Pasuk in Bereishis, Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. It says here in the Pasuk, Ve'ela ha-malachim, these are the kings, asher malchu be'eretz Edom, who lived, who reigned in the land of Edom. Edom, of course, is attributed to Esav. Lefnei malach melech lefnei Yisrael, before they ruled there, a king of the Jewish people. Pasuk v'omer, it says in the Zoya, in the Idra Zuta. Kasiv, it says in the Pasuk, Ve'ela ha-malachim, asher malchu be'eretz Edom. These are the kings who reigned in the land of Edom. Hu Hadava, right? This is the meaning of the Pasuk in Tehillim in capital in Perek Memches. Ki nei hamalachim ne'adu. The kings will come together, will gather together. Ovu yachta, they will pass by together. Now, what does it mean to say, Hine hamalachim ne'adu, the kings come together, Avu yachdav, they pass together. So says the Idra Zuta, ne'adu means ba'an asa be'eretz edoim. They will come together, they will gather together, ba'an asa to the place, which is called Eretz Edoim, the land of Edoim, ba'asa didinim is achtin taman, a place where the dinim, with a strict judgment, the dinim come together. Avu yachtav, what does it mean to say? They will pass by together. The chsiv, as it says, vayomas vayimloch tachtav. Because in all the psukim here, from Lamed Beis until Lamed Tes, continue and say, for example, vayimloch be'edoim bela ben ba'or. Bela ben ba'or was the first king to rule in Edoim. V'shem Iroi Din Hava, the name of the city Din Hava. V'yomaz Bela, Bela died. V'yimloich Tachtav, and who ruled after Bela? Yoivav ben Zerach bi Batzra. Yoivav ben Zerach for the town of Batzra. Now, what does it mean? V'yomaz v'yimloich Tachtav. So, this, in fact, actually, is going to refer to what's called the Malucha of the Kings. Okay? That each one reigns, and then it goes on and says, Hema ro, continues with the capital of Tehillim, Hema ro, they will see, Ken Tamo, they'll be in a wonderment, Nevhalo, they will be shaken, Nechpazo, they will be shaken with fear. The loy is kaimu basrayu, right? Begin to takinu damaka, loy is kinu. The kings will not be able to be in their places, which means we'll actually see what it means is that the oireis, the lights, will not be able to be in their vessels before begin the takinun de malka lo yiskinu, before there is the tikun, right? Before there is the rectification and completion of atzilus, the kalsa kadisha, the shurui, and in fact the higher Sfiras, the higher Patsufim, this refers to Atik Anarich, Lo Yizdamnu. We're not created yet. And this it says, Hu Adin Kasher Shamonu Kedra'inu. Now, what is being said here? What's being said here is an incredible thing. What's being said here is that the kings that are mentioned here, at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, these kings of Edom, in fact, our kings refer to spiritual things that will not be able to stay in their places, and therefore they will reign for a while, and then after that they will die. Now, how did the Arizal understand this? Now, first of all, before we even look at the Arizal, we have to understand that in fact, actually, the Rabbeinu Bachya speaks about this. The Rabbeinu Bachya, in fact, at the very end of Parshas Vayishlach, he says explicitly, that these kings that are spoken about in Edom, these kings refer to, in the Bein Obachya, which I didn't send out, but it's in Perek Lamed Vav, Pasek Lamed Tes, in the Shvel's edition, is Daf Shin Beis, and there the Bein Obachya says, Umikan, right? Bein Obachya says, I'm sorry, in Daf Shin Aleph, this is an allusion. The worlds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, b'midas hadin, with the midah of din, of strict justice, quote unquote strict justice, before he created this world, before he revealed his kingdom to this world. Zeu, that means, and on Daf Shin Beis, Lifnei Melach Melach Lifnei Yisrael. Umikan, says Rabbeinu Bachya, from here we see, Shayabayna Oilamus Machivan, because Baruch Hu created worlds and destroyed them, Ad Jabora Es Elo, until he created the final kings, Vishata Ba Midas Harachamim, and included Midas Harachamim together with Midas Hadin. Now, let us look at the Arizal. This, I hope we sent out, Daf Lamed Tes. In the Arizal, I'm going to read now from the Eitz Chaim, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, in the Eitz Chaim. The Arizal says, "What does this Zoyar mean?" It means as follows: V'nachzu levar said it's Yisayin Malachim Eilu mitecha bina. The Zayin Malachim come from bina. Says in other words, what we have is the Zayin Malachim are going to refer to Sfiras that come from the Sfira of bina. Bina we have seen was in fact Tavuna in the Goy. V'ech nishbaru and how they were will be broken. Hine says the Ari Rishoyna Yotzu Kula mitecha bina. First, all of the Sfiras, all the kings, which are all the Sfiras, came out of Bina. They were all included in the light of Das. We're going to have the seven Sfiras, the 70 kings, are Das, Chesed Gevuah Teferes, Netzach Hod Yesod. Okay? V'nichlesu imo b'kli shaloi. So all the Sfiras enter into the Kli of Das. V'noida, it is known, okay, the reason says it's known that these malachim are in fact referred to the six spheres. In other words, all of these spheres, all of these spiritual lights, chesed, gevurah, teferet, netzach, hod, yesod, they all came together into first, let's say, including Das, into the Kli of Das. And the Kli of Das was unable to contain more than its own light. So when all the spheres came into the vessel of Das, because every sphere has light and a vessel, so the vessel of Das was unable to bear all of these spheres, v'nishpa, and therefore the Kli of Das shatters, it breaks, v'yorad lamata, and it falls below. And then he says, k'moshe esbaya b'esas Hashem, like we'll explain. Achachar yotzu vav oires achirem b'kli chesed. After that come the six oires, the six lights, the six spheres, which is chesed k'vuot tefer netzach hod yesod, in what? In the Kli of Chesed, the vessel of Chesed. And he couldn't bear them, and he breaks, and he falls. Okay, and then the five eires, which is gevurah teferet netzach hod yesod, they go into the Kli of gevurah, right? And what happens is it breaks too, etc., etc. So every Kli breaks, right? And finally, become to malchus, right? Because what happens is that even though the spheres break, the vessels break, and the lights, I guess, jump out of the vessels, there's still a reshima, still an imprint of the lights. So they all come into the Kli HaMalchus. And that's what the Ari says, because Shabab or HaMalchus, Le'abai Elohu Levadai, V'im Kozel Le'ayochel Esbol. Now when the Or of Malchus came, it was only Or of Malchus itself. The other ones had imprints. But nonetheless, the vessel of Malchus could not accept the Or of Malchus, v'nishpa gabu v'yorad, and it breaks. Okay? So therefore, what is going on? What's going on is that what is the Idra saying? The Idra is saying is the different spheres, the different lights of the different ways of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the way in which he acts in the world, which represent the spheres, these lights, these worlds, all of them emerge from the higher world, the highest sphere of Bina, and they are to be placed in their respective vessels, and the vessels cannot contain these lights, and therefore there's a breakage and a shattering of the vessels. And even when we get to Malchus, says the Ari, even though the Or of Malchus is only the Or, the light of only one sphere, but nonetheless, despite that, the Or of Malchus is unable to sustain the light of its sphere, and it breaks too. Now, what is this breaking? Well, if you go on the Ari, you'll see the breaking means that all of this takes place in the world of Atzilus. Atzilus is the higher world where God is at one with his creation. There's nothing physical. When the breakage of the vessels takes place, then in fact the shattered parts of the vessels fall into the worlds of physicality, which are the three worlds of Beriah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah that we spoke about a few weeks ago. So, in other words, what the Ari understands is that the Misas HaMalachim, what the Idra is speaking about, that they could not be Mekayim Basrayu, they could not exist in their place, means that the light of the Sviras, when it first emerged, were unable to be contained for any significant amount of time within the vessel. Consequently, the vessel shattered, and the shattered parts of the vessel fell into what became now the physical world. So, in fact, that's the pshat, that's the meaning of the pasuk. It says, Vayomas, Vayimloch, Vayomas, Malicha, Malucha means, as the Idra says, they went into their vessels. Vayomas means there was a shattering of the vessel, and Misa strictly means that the pieces, the fragments of the vessels, fell into the physical worlds of Pirud, where there is a strict dichotomy between the physical and spiritual. In gradation, this refers to the worlds of Beriah, Yetzirah, and Asiya. Okay, now, what is this? What's going on? It's very, very important to understand that the Benu Bachya, and this is, the Goyen says explicitly, this Peo Shosap this Neosa, that this is really the meaning of the first Rashi in the Chumash. All of you, when you, a number of years ago, you learned Chumash, and the first Rashi in the Chumash addresses an interesting question. I'm up now the first pasuk in the Chumash in Bereishis. It says, Bereishis bora Elokim eis ha-shamayim v'yaz ha-oretz. Rashi raises a question. Rashi's question is, why did the Torah use in the first pasuk the name for God, which is Elohim, which, as we know, refers to what's called the Midas Hadin? Says Rashi, Kadosh Baruch Hu thought to create the world within, and he saw that the world would not be able to be sustained through Midas Hadin, and therefore what he did was he added to it the Midas HaChesed. That's the Rashi in Bereishis. Now, the fact is that we see that this Lashon, Midas Hadin, the Tziruf of Chesed, appears in the Benu Bachya. What does it mean, God thought to create the world with Midas Hadin? What does it mean, God was sitting there and was trying out a little bit of this, a little bit of that? Then after that, he thought, well, it's not going to work. Let's try something else. Okay, that's the way most people understand the Rashi. It's absolutely absurd and foolish to understand a Rashi like that. To think that we can even speak about God is almost blasphemy like that. But nonetheless, for most people, that's basically the pshat. However, what the Benu Bachya is saying, is what the Goyen says, that's not what's going on. When it says the Kadosh Baruch Hu thought to create the world with Midas Din, that itself was an act. That was an act, and that the world would not be able to exist through Midas Din. The Torah is not speaking about what's called in Yeshivish a havamina, a transient assumption or proposal, hypothesis of God. But what we're speaking about is an actual act of collision and destruction. God's thought to create the world of Midas Hadin actually refers to this metaphysical process by which the lights that came out, in fact, were not able to be contained in their physical setting, in their kli, in their respective vessels. And these vessels, in fact, were destroyed. And Merav Rabbeisai, that's the meaning of the first three psukim in the Chumash. Bereishis bara Elokim et shamayim v'haaretz. God thought to create the world of Midas Hadin. He thought to place these spheres, these lights, in their proper vessels. The world became chaotic, says the Ari somewhere else. This refers to the Shvira. This refers to the destruction that was a consequence of God trying to place these lights in their respective vessels. For Yehi Elokim Yehi Or, God now is Metzarev, heir to the Midas Hadin, Midas Chesed, and because of this, the world is able to sustain itself. So in fact, believe it or not, the first three psukim in the Chumash actually are an account, it's actually inherent in the Rashi, are an account of this process of the breakage of the vessels. Now, what is the significance of the breakage of the vessels? What do we need breakage of the vessels for? The ultimate ultimate concept that is being expressed through the breakage of the vessels is trying to understand evil, trying to understand the shortcomings of the world. How we understand that in fact HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's infinitely good, could possibly create a world which contains evil, which contains physical and spiritual impairment. This is a philosophical question which the Rishonim, the medieval philosophers, all added in different ways. The Rambam and the Maor HaVuchim understands that there really is no something as evil, but it's only a lack of good. However, Kabbalah actually created something which is in fact evil. How does it do so? How do we get from God's illumination, in fact, to the process of evil? So Kabbalah explains it in the following way. The creation of the world, the merger, the forging of the spiritual with the physical, which is the purpose of creation, is in fact described by the placing of lights into vessels. Lights meaning spirituality, vessels meaning something which is a little bit more physical. Of course, we're speaking about Atzilus, so spiritual, physical here are relative terms. However, in the first act, the first attempt, quote unquote, right, to place spirituality in the physical world, the physical world cannot contain the spirituality, which makes sense, because why should something physical be able to contain something spiritual? That's absolutely nonsense. So as a result of that, there's an act of catastrophe, there's a collision, there's a breaking, there's a shattering of the vessels. So what happens is that the physical worlds of Bria, Tzira, Asiya, and especially our physical world, is essentially established by the fallout of the pieces that come from the shattering of the vessels. So, in fact, the evil that we see in the world, everything which we call, quote unquote, bad in the world, is really a consequence of the fact that our world is actually just shattered pieces of vessels which fell from Atzilus, where things were in perfect spiritual harmony, to the worlds of Pirud, where physicality and spirituality are necessarily in antinomy to each other. As a result of that, our world consists of shattered pieces of vessels. That's the existential, ontological reality of our world. Now, as a result of this, we see is that that's the purpose. This goes on. That's the purpose of, first of all, how is this alleviated? How is it possible for man to perfect the world? Or how is it possible for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, in fact, to achieve some type of a harmony between physicality and spirituality? Well, that was actually what we read in the Idra. What happens is, as a result of this, there's a change in the structure of the physical world, which we will not go into now. We will go into this at a later point. This is one of the major novella, Chidushim of Yerizal, which is, in fact, the transfer, the change of paradigm from what's called a Sfira to what's called a Paltzuf. This is something we will speak about in Yirtzeh Hashem at a later time. And because of this, the physical or spiritual worlds are able to accommodate their spiritual lights. The purpose of a Paltzuf, according to Yerizal, is the way in which the spiritual and physical worlds are able to reorient themselves in order to accommodate the infinite Kodesh Baruch Hu. Nonetheless, because of the fact that the initial attempt, quote-unquote, failed, and reality, certainly physical reality, is composed of these shattered vessels, so the purpose, the Avoda, the spiritual work and service of man is basically to repair the shattered vessels, okay? This is something also too we'll speak about at a later time. But in other case, the fact is, what's significant in the Ari is, the vessels of all the spheres shattered. The vessel of Das shattered, the vessel of Chesed shattered, etc., etc. The vessel of Malchus shattered. There is no aspect of the lower spiritual worlds which did not shatter. Nothing stayed unshattered except for the very highest spheres, which of course relate to the higher worlds and don't in a certain sense relate to the lower worlds. But what are our physical worlds? Our physical worlds are none other than the shattered pieces that come from the vessels which were shattered during these Shviras HaMalachim. Okay? Now, Now that we've explained the Arizal, I hope this was more or less clear. Now we're going to look at the Goyin. Now I hope we have the proper Xerox of the Goyin in the Safed and Steilsa. And let me give a little bit of an introduction to the Safed and Steilsa. I mentioned to you, dear listeners, that, right, let me just hold it up and show everybody where the Safed and Steilsa is. It's on Daf Gimel, Amud Aleph, in the Safed and Steilsa. On the bottom, it should say page 143. Now, I mentioned that there are two important parts of the Zohar called the Idra, Idra Rabbe, Idra Zuta. These are the Great Hall and the Small Hall. The Safed Steilsa is also a section of the Zohar. It's very, very terse. The Goyin understood, you look at the Hakdama of Chaim Vital to the Perush of the Goyin, the Safed Steilsa, the Goyin understood that the Safed Steilsa was a Mishnah. The Idras were like Gemaras, i.e. interpretations of the Safed Steilsa. Okay, so in other words, the Goyin wrote a Perush, a commentary on the Safed Steilsa, and in his Perush, he made very, very much use of interpretations of the Idras, because the Idras, according to the Goyin, are in fact the Tanaic interpretations of the Safed Steilsa, which functions as a Kabbalistic Mishnah. Now, the Safed Steilsa says the following thing. I'm reading now from Aleph Amud Beis. I know that you don't have it in front of you, but I'm reading it for you, and you will believe me that what I'm reading is correct. Tana, we learn, says the Safra, the Steilsa, the Ad Deloy Havi Miskala, before there was a balance, which means before there was a balance, let's say you have Chesed and Din, which is Das, Lo Havi Mashkichin Apin Ba'apin, the worlds were not mashkiach, did not face each other, face to face. Aman beis amud beis. O malchin kadmoin misu. The early kings died. Death, by the way, as we've seen, refers to the falling of the vessels into the physical worlds of Bria Yetzirasiya. Vizyunein lo ishtachu. And because of this, well, that's a statement which we'll speak about another time. Basically, it means that their upper high spheres no longer were present in these lights. Va'ara ispatalas, and the land was nullified. It was made bottle. Says the Goyin, what does it mean to say va'ara ispatalas? I'm now in the Goyin of Gilmar Aleph. It's in the first column where there's a Siv Vav. V'ara is patolos. Says the Goyin, he loy malcha klal. She didn't rule at all. Very interesting. The Goyin is cholek on the Ari. Because the Ari said, on daf lamet tesom and aleph, then malchus, there was a melucha malchus. Right? The Goyin said, right, that there was a melucha malchus and it broke. That's what we said. The Goyin, the Arizal. The Arizal learned, Lamatesim and Aleph, there was a melucha malchus. Malchus reigns. The light of malchus went into the clear malchus. El Hulavadah, only it went into the malchus, right? Vim calls that, nonetheless, the Kli of malchus was not able to contain the light of the malchus and it broke. That's the way that Arizal learned. The Goyin doesn't learn like that. The Goyin learns that the aur of the Malchus, the light of the sphere of Malchus, did not rain at all, did not go into its Kli. Why is this true? Says the Goyin, it's going as a reason. Delay slay me groma klo, because Malchus doesn't have its own light, says the Goyin. Elamash makabelus mi baila. Malchus only has light which it receives from her husband. But it doesn't have its own light. The sphere of Malchus doesn't have its own light. It's light that it receives from somebody else. Lefichach, kan shem lochem devak misu. So therefore, the lights of the king kings of the first six spheres, which were called Chesed, Gevurah, Teferet, Netzach, Ad Yesod, they died. They came. The lights of these six spheres entered in their six respective vessels. The vessels, in fact, smashed. He loy ba klal, leklal avaya. The light of Malchus never happened. Ulefichach lo nizkar malucha. And therefore, the malucha of Malchus, vavaya, is not mentioned at all, but Torah leklal. Malchus is not mentioned at all in the Torah. V'yotzerak nekuda achas. What happened was that Malchus just went out as one part, one nekuda, one point, v'teishu nekuda tash'ar l'mayla. And 9 points, in fact, actually stayed above. Okay, now, what is the Goyin saying? The Goyin is arguing on the Arizal. The Goyin is saying there was no breakage of the kli of the vessel of Malchus. Malchus basically came out in 1/10 of its capacity. That's what the Goyin says. Okay, now, so we have a explicit machloikas between the Goyin and the Arizal. In fact, the machloikas is in fact actually a machloikas in how to read the different texts. Because, in fact, the Shivas Balochim and are mentioned in Parshas Vayishlach. So it says in the Idra that all came into their place. In fact, because of this, they were Ram Miskayim. But the Goyin says no. If you look at the language, stop and stay, sir, it says Aris Batelas. It just didn't come out fully. But it isn't that the Malchus, the orb of the Malchus, went into the clean, it broke. Okay, now, this is the Machloikas of the Goyin and Arizal. What Lamayna Kamina? Who cares? Who cares? Light breaking, not breaking, who cares? There's a fundamental Machloikas here between the Ari and the Goyin. And what's the Machloikas? First of all, Malchus, if you look at the Ramchal, this is obviously Ramchal, but it's clearly the entire Kabbalah. Malchus, in a certain sense, represents the thing that's closest to our physical world. Our physical world, that's Malchus. Malchus is the last sphere. What does it mean, leis l'megama klal? Because Malchus is physical, it doesn't have any spirituality. It receives its spirituality from the higher world, from the higher spheres. So Malchus represents our physical world. What is our physical world? What is it? According to Yari, since there was a shvir, there was a breaking of the vessel of Malchus, our world is shattered pieces of vessels. It's shattered. There's no order to our world. It's purely shattered. There's no order. There's no system to our physical world. There's no scientific architecture to our physical world. It's purely shattered vessels. That's what our physical world is. It's nothing. However, according to the Goyin, that's not true. Our physical world did not express any breaking of the vessels. It came out in a less spiritual state because only one nekuda out of 9 nekudas came out. But our world is not something which is shattered. Our world is something which has structure. It has precision. In fact, it has scientific natural law. That's what our world has. Therefore, what is the dispute? What is the machloikas between the Goyin and the Ari? According to the Ari, there is no scientific structure to our physical world. Our physical world is merely shattered vessels. That's what it is. Our physical world is no different than the higher spheres, the higher worlds, which are also Bria, Yetzira, Siya, which in fact also are just the remnants of the shattered pieces of the vessels. However, according to the Goyin, there's never a shattering of our physical world. Our physical world emerges as a world, the way it was created, albeit its spiritual aspect has in fact left it, and what's remained, like every light leaves, is the imprint of the spiritual, upper spiritual 9 nekudos, 9 points, or 9 spheres, which went above, and our physical world represents the lowest sphere of the 10 spheres of Malchus, but nonetheless, it's an intact. It's a physical reality which has structure, which has scientific natural law. So the question is, not the question, the issue with dividing the Ari and the Goyin is, the Goyin understands our physical world is a physical world created by God, which has its original structure, its original Chachmah. Whereas for the Ari, the physical world is nothing but shattered pieces of broken vessels. And this gets us back to our initial understanding of the Goyin's Kabbalah, as opposed to what would appear to be the Balatanya's and most interpretations of the Arizal's Kabbalah. The Goyin understands that Tzimtzum is Kipshutai, the spiritual leaves the physical remains intact, albeit physical. Whereas for the Arizal, if the physical contains a breaking of the vessels, you have to say there was some type of a spiritual imminence in the physical world, that someone was shattered, was broken. So the Goyin accepts the physicality of the physical world, which in a certain sense contains the imprint of the Chachma, of the wisdom with the Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Whereas for the Arizal, the physical world is just shattered vessels. There's no imprint. All there is shattered pieces that somehow man has to assemble through his worship and through his Avodah and through his tefillahs and through his kavanas. So the notion of a physical world intact with all of its scientific imprint of God's wisdom is in fact the guiding light behind the Goyin's interpretation of the Shviras HaKelim. And that's the significance of the way the Goyin learns the Shviras HaKelim. Now that we know all this, we can now go back and understand, right, a little bit of what we read at the very, very beginning of this class, of this shiur. The Goyin understands that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu first created the world, God's Chachma and the physical world were one and the same. God's Dibur and the physical world were one and the same. God's Hashgach and the physical world were one and the same. As a result of creation, there's a separation. There's a detachment between God's Chachma, God's Dibur, and God's Hashgacha of the physical world. The physical, spiritual separates from the physical. This is a type of a Tzimtzum, but since there's actually, we're dealing with actually a later type of Tzimtzum in the exact physical world, not a Tzimtzum in God's Ratzon, which is the Tzimtzum, but a lower part of Tzimtzum, which establishes the physical world. This detachment is called Shvira. Shvira is not a breakage. Shvira is not imminence, which has gone haywire in a physical surrounding, but rather Shvira is a detachment from the spiritual, of the spiritual from the physical, from Chachma, from Hashkacha, from the physical world. But the imprint remains within the physical world. Says the Goyin, if a person will explore the physical world, and the lashon of the Goyin here is yochol lahasig ulefi hasagas sichloi, the person, in accordance with his intellect, in fact, tries to understand the physical world, he will be able to pick up the imprint of God's hashkacha, chachman dibor, which at one time were part and one with the physical world, and now have detached themselves from the physical world. This is what the Goyin is saying. We see here very clearly that the Goyin is learning that the act of Shvira with respect to the physical world was not an act of breakage, but rather was an act of detachment. And this is what the Goyin says in his Perush on the Sabtas Neusa, that the Malchus merely emerged minus the 9 parts which went up, says the Goyin. The Goyin says one Nekuda remain, and I'm reading from the Goyin's Perush Sabtas Neusa, Vitesha Nekudas Nishau Lamaila, they went up, they remained up. Meaning that what? Is that basically the act of Shvira for the Malchus, which is the physical world, was merely a detachment of the upper nine parts from the lower part, which is what the Goyin is saying. Except the Goyin is saying that this took place in three dimensions, in terms of Chachma, in terms of Dibur, and in terms of Hashgacha. Okay? And both three things are really somehow a unity of a Kadosh Baruch Hu with the physical world, which has now been detached to allow the physical world to emerge by itself with the imprint of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's three remaining things on the physical world. Okay? So in other words, the Goyin's understanding of the act of Shvira is in fact critical in order to maintain the Goyin's, to maintain the Goyin's understanding of the scientific, natural, and intellectual, right, view of the physical world. Now, I want to bring a point here, which is very, very important too. And I want to go back a little bit to what we spoke about in the very, very beginning of the Shiurim. The Arizal, I'm going to go into the Mitzvah Hashem in the next year because I think it's important to always place the Arizal in the Goyin within intellectual history. Very important. Even if we don't believe that the Goyin and the Arizal picked up scientific and philosophical textbooks, nonetheless, according to the maxim of Reb Tzadik, there's a very important parallelism to be made which cannot be ignored, unless you're totally ignorant. Now, I mentioned the fact that in the Arizal, of course, is right before the 16th century. The 17th century, I mentioned a number of weeks ago, saw the construction of philosophies which viewed rational mathematical structure within the physical world. That is to say, in medieval times, when the science was a science of the Greeks, of Aristotle and Plato, the mathematical structure of the world was limited to the celestial spheres, the celestial parts of the world. The physical world did not ever have any inherent mathematical structure, except for the fact that there were, in fact, basic laws for the preservation of the species. This Lashon, this language of mathematical structure, in fact, we see in the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, is synonymous with the concept of Hashgacha. The Rambam says in part 3, chapter 17, in the Guide for the Perplexed, the Mor Nevuchim, says the Rambam, is that God's Hashgacha is at one with the celestial spheres. In fact, says the Rambam, this is the opinion of Aristotle, of all people. However, says the Rambam, according to Aristotle, God's Hashgacha ends with the moon. Below the moon, there's no Hashgacha, only a general Hashgacha on species, due to the fact that species have natural laws which seek to preserve the species. So in fact, according to the Greek science, right, the way the Rambam explains it, mathematical structure and Hashgacha are one and the same. They're one and the same. The physical world, which according to Aristotle did not have any mathematical structure, it's only something which has different types of things which are grouped and categorized, then the physical world, according to Aristotle, does not have any Hashgacha, except for general Hashgacha on the species. Ah, where's Hashgacha? Then the Rambam agrees with Aristotle with respect to the physical world. The Rambam says there's no Hashgacha on animals, or on leaves, or on snow, and rain, and things like that. However, there's Hashgacha on man only because man is an intellect. Man's intellect, says the Rambam, in Perek Zayin, allows him to have Hashgacha, because man's intellect, in a certain sense, is similar to that of the planets and the celestial spheres, which also have intellects. That's the Shitas HaRambam. Now, we mentioned in the first class or the second class lecture, I don't remember, that in fact, this was the view of the Greeks, that mathematics equals Hashgacha equals God. God is in the highest celestial spheres. There's no notion of immanence. Now, beginning in the beginning of the 17th century, namely Descartes, And then you have a series of very, very important philosophers in the 17th century. Descartes, you have Malebranche, and you have Baruch Benedict Spinoza. All of these philosophers, especially Descartes, see that in fact there is a mathematical structure to the physical world. Descartes' philosophy is all about the mathematical structure of the physical world. Hence, these philosophers understood that the body of God, which is, we'll call it God's Hashkacha, enters into the physical world. In other words, in accordance with the Aristotelian and the Hellenistic philosophical notion of Hashkacha, once the physical world attains mathematical structure, God's Hashkacha becomes immanent within the physical world, let alone his body becomes immanent in the physical world. We spoke about that several weeks ago. Now, and we said that in fact the Arizal's Kabbalah heralds this imminence, even though the Arizal's speak about mathematical structures, the Arizal's Kabbalah heralds this imminence into the physical world. Certainly this is the Egeres of the Baal HaTanya in his response to the accusations of the Goyim, which we also saw, I think, in the second or third lecture. Now, the fact is that there was a backlash against this in the 18th century. Right? There was a backlash in the 18th century. Now, a very, very good piece of work, which I want people to read, we won't be able to send it out because too many pages, but there was a very famous philosopher who lived at the beginning of the 20th century. His name was Kassira. Kassira, C-A-S-S-I-R-E-R, Kassira. And Kassira was known for many very important works on philosophy and history. And one of his important works is called The Philosophy of the Enlightenment. And when he speaks about the Enlightenment, he's not speaking about the 17th century, but he's speaking about the 18th century. And in the 18th century, Kassira said that in fact there was an abandonment of this concept of immanence. In other words, the mathematical structure of the world was now not seen to be part and parcel of the divine being, the divine presence, but rather the mathematical structure of the world was merely the way man was able to view the structure of nature. It's not that there was actually a divine presence in the physical world. Mathematics doesn't equal the body of God, doesn't equal the Hashkacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But mathematics is merely the way in which man looks to discover the laws of nature. That means that the mathematical structure of the world is not somehow God's divine presence in the physical world, but merely man looks to elucidate through experiment and through exploration and through scientific reasoning, right, to explain mathematically how the physical world exists. But it's not that there's in fact actually an inherent divine omnipresence in the physical world called mathematics. And says Kassira, this was a very important change of philosophical paradigm from the 17th century to the 18th century. Now, the fact is, I want to claim that just like the Arizal's Kabbalah, if we understand it immanently, as most people understand it, in fact heralds or parallels the 17th century philosophies of immanence, understanding the rational structure of nature to be part of the divine omniscience, omnipresence of the world. But rather, this is the Arizal. The Goyin's Kabbalah is much more in tune with the later Enlightenment, Kassira's Enlightenment of the 18th century, where in fact we're not dealing with the presence, the Hashkacha of immanence, of God, of the divine in the physical world, but rather the Goyin merely speaks of what's called a roshim. A roshim is an impression. What's an impression? It's merely that when man tries to understand scientifically and intellectually the physical, natural world around him, then he will discover natural law, and by virtue of that, he will be able to ascertain the existence of a chachma, which at one time was at one with the physical world and separated itself in the physical act of creation, which the Goyim is defined to be the act of Shvira. So in fact, we see that the reaction, the radical reaction of the 18th century to the 17th century's notion of the corporeality of God within the natural world has its incredible parallel in the Goyim's reinterpretation of the Shvira based upon the text of the Safed of the Steilsa, in contradistinction to that of the Arizal. The Goyim, Baruch Hashem, preserves the physical, scientific integrity of the world. The Goyim is able to maintain the argument of rationalism against the forces of paganism, of immanence. And because of this, the Goyim is able to maintain a scientific, rational, mathematical picture of the world in non-divine corporal terms. This is the Shita of the Goyim. So we see, Baruch Hashem, the Goyim has come through for us once again. We were almost caught in a world of shattered parts, of shattered vessels, a world which in fact actually has no scientific structure, a world which is akin to the world of the Kalam, of atoms that come and go, no scientific laws, no existence in and of itself, merely hu'oma vayehi, and to a world which even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu buttresses the world, nonetheless the world is intelligible, the world has its physical intelligibility, scientific intelligibility. The world, in fact, actually, of the Goyim is the physical world that scientists can study, can look at, to describe the beautiful scientific and biological structure, the mathematical structure of the world. And by doing this, we can extrapolate to a greater understanding of that incredible Chokhmah, which at once was at one with the world with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Baruch Hashem, the Goyim has saved the day again. And with this, Mirtz Hashem, we will close over here. Adam Khan, I did get your question. Maybe let me answer the first question that you asked because it's relevant to all the Shi'urim. Your question is, could Rebbe give a short introduction as to why the Gilui Arizal happened 500 years ago, not earlier? Why then? It seems that these incredible teachings run counter to Adoras. You're right, Adam. Not only do they run counter to Yiras HaDeiras, these are actually Aliyas HaDeiras. If you're interested, Adam, in this, we will Mirtz Hashem Xerox for you the Chidushim Uviurim of the Leshem on the Eitz Chaim. There the Leshem says that Yiras HaDeiras only refers to Nigla, does not refer to Nistel, says the Leshem. In as the generations go on, more teachings al pinister are revealed. So in other words, on the contrary, Adam, when you think about Kabbalah, don't think in terms of Yiridas HaDeiras, think in terms of Aliyas HaDeiras. Yiridas HaDeiras only refers to Nigla. That's the lesson. If you ask Meir Tribetz, I'll tell you that even in Nigla, there's also Aliyas HaDeiras. That's actually based itself upon a Shloah, based upon a Rambam, that in fact, actually, the drushes actually continue creatively within history. Mati Lichtenstein can tell you all about that. But right now, we're going to have to stop the shiur at this point. We have a lot of interesting things to speak about. I will try somehow to maybe Xerox the main parts of Kassira's book for next week. But if not, we will actually go deeper in actually the processes of creation and Torah knowledge. Until then, I wish everybody a good davach, a good week, a successful week, and I hope to see you the same time, same place at this, is it called the channel? Be well. Thank you once again, Libby, for your technical help.